But there was a position advertised for the German consulate, and I thought, wow, that would be really neat. Because in one of my German classes, I remember there was a girl who worked in the French consulate, and I thought, well, that would be such a neat job. But I really didn't think take it seriously, because why would they hire me? I have, you know, a limited amount of German, and I'm not really an office worker, et cetera, et cetera. But then I got home, and I thought, I couldn't get it out of my mind, and I thought, well, you know, there's no harm in trying. The worst they can do is say, no, you're not getting the job. So I phoned about the job, and Mr. Thiele had me down for an interview the next day. I still remember it was pouring rain. And I got there, and I hadn't even had time. Like, everything was in English that I had, and I felt really badly. And I said, you know, I can only type 45 words a minute. So he called over to Mrs. Gomalta, and he said, how much do you need? 45 would be fine, she said. So we really need someone who can speak English and has German knowledge and blah, blah. So they gave me the job, and I was ecstatic.
What kind of a person was Mr. Thiele? What were your impressions
Mr.
of him?
Mr. Thiele. He was a very loving person and quite a gentle person. You know, he would get upset about some things, but I don't know, I just always found him to be a very, very gentle man. And he loved children, and children loved him. Kids would come in, they'd be screaming, and he would go over and sort of pat them on the head or, you know, touch their face, and they would be, you know, just really liked him. He wasn't as strict as Mrs. Gomalt in terms of, like, the quality of work and so forth. He would be more willing to say, oh, you know, that's it's fine that way, whereas she would be, you know, quite a stickler.
What did he look like?
Oh, he was a very large man, like, tall and strong-looking, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very big hands, big fingers. He had a great laugh, and, you know, be like, oh, Gottes Willen, you know, or, this is ja alles Quatsch. Things like that, and, or, you know, expressions I learned from him, like, ate a potato, and what other ones did he like to use? Gosh, it's been so long, I've forgotten now. But he was a dear man. I remember at one point, now why was that? Maybe when he retired, my mom decided she would send flowers. Well, you know, and she sent a card saying, you know, thank you for always being so nice to our daughter. And he could not get over the fact that my mother, who really didn't know him from Adam, would send him flowers. He just found this just bizarre, and he really liked that. And I remember him phoning her up and thanking her and stuff. But, he was a very well-traveled person, and he was a good speaker, although, you know, his English was really not very good, but he always used to introduce Mrs. Gomalt as his right hand, and I was his left hand, when we were at receptions, and there were a lot of receptions in his home, and I thought, oh, yeah, how am I going to do that? But I did, and it was fun.
Finally, I guess, Mrs. Gomalt. So, what kind of a person was she?
Well, I mean, I appreciated the fact that she demanded perfection, but it was difficult. I felt like initially, I can never please this woman, it doesn't matter what I do. You know, so I would often come away from work feeling rather discouraged. However, once that first year was up, and I stayed on, she grew to be, because at first she was always comparing me to her other colleague, and oh no, I needed to do it this way, and she already had told me that 5 times, you know, well, hadn't it sunk in yet, and that kind of thing. And as I got to know her better, and then everything changed. Once I had the job and wanted to stay on, like, I remember initially she would say things to me like, well, you know, I'll show you how to do this if you're interested, but maybe you're not interested. And I said, well, no, of course I want to learn, you know, I want to learn everything, so. And then it got to the point where she was always talking about, you know, her other colleague and that, and then I would overhear conversations where she would be talking about me, and, well, you know, my little colleague this or that, or, you know, and I had sort of gone up a notch, I guess, in her esteem. At least that's how it felt to me. And later on, when we took on somebody else, then everything was like, no, no, Fräulein Blair does it this way. So, okay, I finally made it. But as, you know, as I got to know her, I grew to love her very much. I mean, she had her hardness about her, but when I learned that she, when she first came to Canada, and all that she had been through during the war, and what she endured here when she first came, she had a job like working at Chicken Delight, you know, plucking the chicken feathers off, and just because they needed the money, and the things that she had done, and then she landed a position in the consulate, and that was quite a coup. And she, the way that she was treated was with harshness in the job. They had to do, she would tell me about the audits that would happen, and if there was one thing out of place or one mistake, like you were reprimanded, they were taken into rooms and interviewed about other people. What did they feel about so and so, and how were they doing their job, and, you know, all kinds of things. Like she said, it was just really horrendous. And another thing that we did a lot in those days, not so much now, but people would try to prove that they were German, and if you didn't have, like, when you came to Canada, if you were staatenlos, or you know, you didn't have the right papers that said you that you were a German, then in order to get a German passport, you had to prove it, even though a lot of times it would be clear because you look at the family names and you can tell. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough for the authorities, so the Staatsangehörigkeit, the citizenship paper, would have to be applied for, which is a long, horrendous process. And I remember one particular case, it stands out in my mind because it was so long and drawn out, and because the people were so unhappy. I remember them crying in my office, and I said, you know, it takes a long time to get used to Canada. It's like, for them, it was like a cultural no man's land, and everything was just, you know, they tried, but they just couldn't get used to it here. They hated the winters. They were just lonely and homesick and really wanted to go back, and they had been in Germany not because they were German, but I think they had come from Poland, and so they, but they'd been a long time in Germany before a decision was reached that they could not stay. Their only hope would have been to get a German passport, and interestingly enough, in their background there was German, but you had to go so far back. It would have worked, except for, I think, on her side of the family, like his side of the family, we went so far, and then it didn't work out. So she was still a hope that maybe her grandmother or something, her great-grandmother, and yes, they had been German, but because she married a non-German, and in those days, your citizenship was sort of revoked when you married somebody else. So,
poor women.
Yeah. So it just didn't work out. And I just remember they were just devastated. And, you know, I don't know if, whatever happened to them. They had two little kids. And yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. That's the sad thing. I don't know if they ever managed to get used to it. But, you know, she just wasn't willing to give up that, you know, she thought there would be some way, you know. So then the only way is if you become a Canadian and you get a job over in Germany and you apply to go over there that way and hope that maybe eventually you can stay. But yeah, so there were a few heartbreaking stories like that.